Welcome to College Crosscast as we examine college lacrosse in crisis. I'm Ryan McDonald.
I'm Chris Ostremski.
I'm Chip Mazar.
Hey folks, how you doing? This is Erie Barrister.
And as you can tell, after a completely wild first week of college lacrosse, first full week, there's a lot of teams in crisis. Thus, because they're generally the fan bases that talk the loudest, means college lacrosse as a whole is in crisis. And, yeah.
Yeah, I like this kind of stuff, even though one of my teams is, quote, in crisis, end quote. But to be quite honest, I could care less about said team.
He's not mad. It's funny to him.
It's not mad. I'm actually the opposite. And we'll get into that later.
Yes, because you're a closet Johns Hopkins fan. Who knows?
It's funny to him. Well, that would mean he'd be even more mad.
Well, no, because if... Well, when we're talking about the team that he's talking about now, he would be happy, and then 12 hours later, he'd be mad, but, well, whatever. We'll get to all that.
He really lost.
We had a perfect metaphor on our first take before we just had to re-record this. Jake?
Yeah. I got two teeth pulled, so... If you wanted to know how certain college lacrosse fan bases are feeling right now, they felt like me the last 72 hours after the dentist performed murder on my mouth.
So it's an apt metaphor, unless you're the school that Jake is paying tuition to.
Yeah, man, made the local news and everything. They were.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to that. Let's start from the top because it went right off the bat. Your typical ACC ACC school losing to a SoCon school midweek. It's typically UVA or UNC. It's in the middle of March or April. No, we're doing this right off the bat, baby. High Point 13, Duke 9. A week after High Point pitches a shutout, Tim Trotner's follow-up back, 19 saves against the Blue Devils, and Chris Young puts up 4 goals and an assist. Ben Baker with a hat-trick of his own. And the High Point Panthers with their program-best victory.
You're just going to forget Asher Knowlton, 2 goals, 3 assists.
So, a big victory over the number 2 team in the nation.
Huge, huge victory for the Blue Devils, or excuse me, the Panthers. I thought they had a little bit of talent. I know Knowlton was great. Tim Trotner is an underrated goalie. Chris Young kind of came out of kind of nowhere. Ben Baker, same as well. But you look at this, you look at Tim Trotner, one of the better goalies, 19 saves. Had a pretty good St. Bonaventure game as well. I mean, it's very tough to... It's kind of tough to say, like, he had a bad game when they shut out St. Bonaventure. Kind of had a good game where even they shut out St. Bonaventure in their first ever game. But Duke kind of looked February-ish. And I know even Brad Smith looked very February, even though he was hurt with the foot injury, got some man-up time, and then later started an attack on Saturday in Jacksonville. But definitely think High Point could be the team that's on everybody's radars now.
Duke look like ass. That's what Duke looked like.
Yeah, it was quite the big contrast is, too. I know Jake put it that way, but I think that is kind of actually an apt way to put it. They went from being, you know, well-balanced and spreading the scoring around against Furman. I know it was 17-9, maybe not the flashiest score against a team like Furman, but they look good. They look like they were building off what they did in the tournament. Then they go midweek against High Point at home and lay a complete egg, and they did not look good in the process.
I think that's part of it. Midweek, you have a game about 3 days beforehand. I mean, Duke kind of does this sometimes 2 games in 1 weekend, so they're not it's not unusual, but there's a lot of pomp and circumstance after the Furman game because that was Kostanowski's 400th win. You know, they look good. They dropped 17. I think, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but this could be, you know, this maybe should have been a team a game that we kind of look for, like a maybe do kind of maybe sleepwalking into it, because High Point plays really well early season. High Point, you know, beat UVA. Was it? That was one of our first years doing podcasting, I think. So like, and they played teams tough last year against Maryland. Wasn't I think it was closer than it should have been. So early season, High Point, you know, not that much of a road game for them. They pretty much, you know, that I don't know how close they are to Durham, but my main point is just like
it's a North Carolina derby,
you know. And Trotner, I mean, Trotner, sorry, has actually that St. Bonaventure game. Whatever, this is their first game ever, but like blanking any team is still pretty impressive. And he finished with 19 saves against Duke. Like, if you know, if you were going to have a recipe for upsetting a number two team in the country like Duke, like that, you know. Kind of weird seeing Brad Smith. Chris, did you mention that? Or Ryan? I don't know.
I did maybe one of you guys just mentioned it.
Yeah, that was really weird. A little bit, you know, seeing him out there just to begin with. You know, it was just kind of a weird night for Duke is what I'm saying. Yeah, they just got caught napping maybe.
They looked like ass. Like, I don't know how many times we got beat around the bush because it's Duke. They looked bad.
Their riding looked awful. I think the worst part was their riding.
The worst part was that they, their shorties got freaking abused. I mean, High Point in the fourth quarter ran the exact same play where a guy would come around the cage and a guy would cut to the goal from the middle of the field, would catch it and score. They ran the same play like three or four times again and again and again, and it all worked. On the offensive side, Duke had essentially Joey Manown, and then that was it.
Yep.
6-on-6. They scored 8 goals at even, and a couple of those were on scramble transition kind of plays. I think they only ended up with around 6 or so goals in settled 6-on-6 situations, which is not good. And, you know, and we'll get to it, you know, in their later game, but I think this team so far looks like a team that is very reliant on faceoffs. They, to me, look, because the faceoffs in this game were High Point won 14-13. You know, Duke won a lot of faceoffs against Furman, dominant faceoff edge, and they ended up in the game against Jacksonville, you know, even though I don't think they particularly looked especially great there either, but put up more goals because they had the faceoff edge. So far, they look to me like a team who is really reliant on having a lot of possessions, which, look, is not surprising. This is a team that is down their best player from last year and one of their best players ever, and is essentially down their second best player. Brad Smith couldn't run. I mean, like,
Weird.
I don't know why he was playing, but the guy couldn't run. Like, it was just, I don't know what they really weren't getting anything much out of him being out there. You know, I mean, the guy just couldn't move. He ended up having one shot. That was it. One shot, one ground ball, one turn. Like, no, they did not look good. Like, I mean, I saw someone saying, I think it was Anish Roth who said, this doesn't look like the usual Duke, you know, February loss, which, one, I hate that narrative to begin with, because somehow people decided that Duke losing in February was actually good, and that it's, like, good to lose games, and they just galaxy-brained the hell out of this. But no, they did not look good. They looked bad. But credit to High Point. High Point's got some players, you know? Asher Nolting's a fantastic player. Chris Young is a good player. Their attack, that is a really solid attack unit. And Troutner's been around the block for a long time and always, you know, makes a big save for them. Duke did not look good.
Well, if it's surprising that we're talking early season Duke in crisis, it's kind of odd to talk about Duke in crisis. Well, that has nothing in common with the following team that's typically in a crisis or two every year, but now we're doing it right off the bat. Cue Ride of the Valkyries. Fire up Syracuse.com, because the Syracuse Orange are in a crisis. In the Eastern Central New York Derby, Colgate 12, Syracuse 9. Syracuse's first loss to the Red Raiders in 11 years. Their only Desco's second opening season loss, or loss to open a season.
Inside the carry room, I think, too.
That is fine, it is an opening season loss, but
whatever, either way, This is no bueno for the Orange.
Not at all. And, you know, I made the trip up to Syracuse, and boy, was that a bad trip to make. One, because it was snowing, two, because of this game.
There was an assault on Ackerman Avenue.
Yeah. I actually sat in the in a very good box with Jim Boeheim and athletic director John Wildhack for the game, discussing Syracuse lacrosse. And got there, and it was already 3-0. And then luckily, you know, I think Colgate overall for this game had an answer to any time Syracuse tried to make it interesting. Like, even when it was 3-2, Petkovic, Brown, Cleveland made it 6-2. And then even in the second half, when you had Kennedy score and Solomon and Curry had the two Solomon goals and the Curry goal to make it a 7-6 game, Colgate answered back. When Kennedy scored the long pole goal and making 9-7, you had the short stick D-Mitty, Will Blumenberg, take advantage of a Griffin Cook freshman mistake, score 10-7. Two goals from Syracuse later, on a man-up, Duncan Hoskinson pretty much ending the game. There is very, very bad defense on Syracuse. Even though they return all their guys on close defense who are starting, they return pretty much three or four of their long stick middies, all four of them from a year ago. Their shorties are god-awful. You have Andrew Helmer, who is a converted long stick middy, playing short stick when not on non-man-up, man-down situations. You have Peter Dirth, a converted offensive midfielder who didn't really last that long on O-Midi. Then he went to D-Midi middle of the year. You have Brett Barlow, a converted LSM. And then also Grant Murphy, also a converted LSM. Those are your four shorties, because Kevin Hutchings left. He quit the team. Dami Oladumaye, academically ineligible. So you have, honestly, a meh, or really bleh, or poop with the shorties. And then the offense, you know, I mean, I think Drake Porter had a really good game. In my mind, he had 14 saves, or a good game at least. He could have probably used some help on defense. The offense, outside of Nate Solomon and mainly Brendan Curry, was atrocious. Voight and Reifus and Trimboli did absolutely nothing at attack and midfield. And then you're looking at your second midfielders, and you know, of course, they didn't do anything because they're the second midfield. And I'll have more on this once you guys have some recaps on what you thought.
I smell some reactions going Chris's way.
That's a tough affair. I mean, that was a really bad opening quarter. Colgate just unloaded on Syracuse. 15 shots. The Orange offense really didn't really get going. Only 3 goals in the first half. They got doubled up by Colgate. Even when it was a kind of a comeback going on in the fourth, like, Colgate still outscored them with dropping 5 in the fourth. So, I mean, it's definitely a disappointing season opener for the Orange faithful. And I think, like, I mean, the Hopkins loss was obviously horrible. Absolutely horrible. And I can't wait for you guys to dunk on me for that. But, yeah, a little bit. This one, like, Towson is a regional rival. Tyson has beaten Hopkins at Towson 2 times. But this was bad, I think, if you're a Orange fan at home with Colgate, who hasn't won since 2008.
Let's get to the real gist of this.
clear out the lane.
Syracuse fans don't really want to admit this, which is interesting considering some of their distaste for John Desco. They dance around the point a lot, and I kind of get why. To some degree, I see it, because it's Syracuse, and how could this ever happen in Syracuse? The issue at Syracuse is they don't have enough good players. That's the issue. This is not an issue that Syracuse didn't come prepared, or that they weren't ready to play. The issue is that Syracuse doesn't have enough good players.
I agree.
Tyson Bomberry is playing, you know, Garden, Colgate, someone attack. But Tyson Bomberry ain't good enough. Plain simple. Syracuse's number one offensive player is Brendan Curry.
He's probably the best player on the team.
Yeah, Brendan Curry is, on a great Syracuse team, the sixth best attacker, or the sixth best offensive player, maybe the fourth or fifth. Certainly not top three. Brendan Curry ain't Kevin Rice. He ain't Dylan Donahue. He ain't JoJo Marasco. He ain't, you know, whoever, and on and on and on. Or definitely not Mikey, Casey, Ryan Powell, whatever. Who's the second best offensive player on this team? Nate Solomon? Nate Solomon is not a starter on the best Syracuse teams. Nick Mellon is their best defenseman. Nick Mellon ain't Joel White. You know, he ain't whoever I'm forgetting. Brendan Mullins. You know, he ain't any of these guys. Drake Porter had a good game. I thought he definitely did really well. He had 14 saves, you know, 56% or so. I thought he did really well. That's the issue. It was the issue last year, you know, that Syracuse didn't have enough good players. And you thought that these guys would get, you know, improve in the offseason, and that you would add some, you know, players, you know, from in the recruiting or whatever it may be. But no, these players are what they are. And when you don't add any freshmen because you insist on redshirting every single freshman every single year, you don't improve your team. I don't know. It's really kind of simple, you know? And Syracuse fans are going to pull their hair out and peek through every little crevice that there is in the program, but it's really simple. You don't have enough good players.
I think an interesting parallel, and I think Chris might agree with this, is it's kind of the same thing that we looked into with the men's basketball team this year, where it's like, oh yeah, we got a lot of guys coming back, but it might not just be all there, really. I mean, granted, the Syracuse men's basketball team is in much better shape and should be easily in the NCAA tournament, but I think you can kind of see a parallel with that too, right, Chris?
I can see a parallel in that, and I mean, look, you're losing Brendan Bomberry, and you're losing Dom Madonna. And I think Greg Porter can do a great job in goal. And then the only question I would really have is a third attackman between, you know, Voight and then Griffin Cook. And, quite honestly, Griffin Cook had some freshman mistakes, and I don't think he's a midfielder. He's an attackman, and it kind of showed that on Friday. But I think Jake is definitely right on the whole. They don't bring good players. Brendan Curry is the best player. Brett Kennedy is probably their best defender and second best player. And then after that, crickets. And I mean, that's kind of why also, you know, I'm going to get in this point right now where I was saying there are some alums and there are some fans, mainly the alums of the Syracuse program, that are cheering for this team to not have a good year this year.
Okay, well, that's just ridiculous.
Here's the reason
that
why. They want... A lot of them want this coaching staff out because they believe that it's time for some new blood, a new face to at least lead this program. They don't think they're getting the same message, and if they feel like, you know, the coaching staff is a little bit out of touch. The coaching staff doesn't recruit a lot anymore. I talk to coaches and I talk to people in the recruiting scene, Ty Zanders, and they say and they admit Syracuse is probably the team that's on the recruiting road the least. And that's why you have guys like Josh Sawada and Russell Mayer decommit and flip to other schools like Michigan and Virginia, respectively. If you're losing those kind of big name, at least your top recruits, because you're not really checking in on them or you're not really on the road a little bit, it's not really worth it. And I mean, look, it's just week one, and it's a Colgate loss, and it's kind of, you know, wow that you lose to Colgate. Also, the fact that he didn't know what you were looking at. You kind of had two guys that coached at Notre Dame last year, and Carrick and John Crawley. Crawley played at Johns Hopkins. So you kind of maybe had an understanding what Carr was going to do if you looked at maybe what Notre Dame was going to do. Possibly.
Well, that's not true, because Colgate's offense looked way better than Notre Dame's offense has.
Yes, because Carrick was free of Kevin Corrigan. But also the defense at Chris Cooper from Binghamton. They know Syracuse very well. Maybe they didn't know what they were going to do. They had anything different. But maybe you had a little gist of an idea what maybe to expect from their past history and where they came from. But overall, I mean, the big thing is...
That's not the issue.
I think the big thing that I mentioned was, you know, there is... Obviously, it's week one. But if this is going to be a long season, and I know this because I've talked to people in Cuse, coaches are on short leashes, mainly as assistants. We'll see about Desco.
The issue is the talent. It's not that, like, what were they? They were not unprepared. They just got beat. And that's again, that's the thing. Is Syracuse fans are obsessed with the coaches because, oh my God, we're Syracuse. It can't be that other teams have caught up with us. It can't be that we don't have better players than everyone else. We're Syracuse. No, you don't have better players than everyone else. That's your issue.
I mean, there were 2 years ago when there was a run of like 5-6 years where Syracuse lost like an average of 4 games a season. So like, yeah, 2018 was bad, and 2019 looks like the beginning of a really tough road. And the recruiting, Chris, you did an amazing, really in-depth research on that post that you wrote about the recruiting troubles. So I agree. There is no rose-colored glasses I have here. I see, like, Syracuse just, like, dropped the level. But, I mean, like, it's just, you know, 2017, they pretty much were Final 14 before getting jumped by Towson.
No, they weren't Final 14, though. They weren't. They weren't Final 14 that year either.
I mean, okay. I that's fair. But I'm just saying, like, from 2012 to 2017, they lost, like, 3 games a year.
And they didn't replace those.
I hear you. That's my point. Yeah, I get maybe like they got to step it up, but I'm just like, this is not irreversible. It was like literally this team was losing 3 games, including the NCAA tournament game for 5 straight years. No, so like, and they won the ACC last year. So as bad as they were, the
regular season ACC, out there,
yeah, it's for sure. But still, they won those games. They went undefeated. So this is my main point. Just like. This is a horrible game.
But I'll interject real quick though. The way Syracuse looked against Colgate, look at their schedule. They got Albany next, which, I mean, granted, I don't think Albany's as good as people are saying, but they sure as hell look better than Syracuse looked on Friday night. Then they got an Army team that just took down a top 20 UMass team. Then you got Virginia. You got Hopkins, and if Hopkins is in desperation mode, if they lose to Loyola, let's say Princeton upsets them, and who does Hopkins have the week before? Cuse.
Princeton.
Who cares?
Princeton.
We're belaboring the point on Syracuse. People didn't come to listen to us talking about Syracuse for 35 minutes.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, if they don't get a win in the next 2 weeks against Albany or Army...
I mean, look, in fairness, we did this last year.
Right. Not on the first game of the year.
But Albany, Colgate's
different than Albany last year. Colgate was unranked.
They lost by like 30 million goals to Albany, and they were down at halftime to Army. And we said if they didn't come back, they were going to miss the NCAA tournament.
They sure as hell have to win the next 2 weeks, because then you have the Virginia, Hopkins, Rutgers, Duke, Notre Dame stretch.
Look, they are not going to be this bad for the entire season. The coaching staff, again, they schemed pretty well. I didn't think they were outcoached by any stretch of imagination. I just think they made it a bit too hard on themselves in the fact that they're at a talent disadvantage. But ultimately, their talent their talent is good enough to beat teams on their schedule. Like, it is not that this talent is so bad that they cannot beat teams on their schedule. Ultimately, look, they turned it over 18 times. They got outworked in the ground balls 17-9. In the first half. Second half, it was more, even though 16 to 14. They missed 5 clears, including going 6 of 10 in the first half, while Colgate went 8 of 8. You know, they're your issues. This was, you know, Colgate beat them ultimately in the first half because Syracuse turned it over too much and missed, you know, went at too many blown clears and made too many forced errors. That happens in week one. They will get better. Stephen Rafis is a good player. You know, will not have as tough of a day as he did. If Brendan Curry is legit and Rafis can be number two guy, long term, they'll be fine, I imagine. Will they get into the tournament? I don't know. I don't care about debating that on February 11th. But again, if you want to know if you want to talk about the real issue with the team, ultimately, is that they have less talent than Virginia and Hopkins and Duke and Notre Dame and Cornell and all these other teams on their schedule. There's your answer.
All right.
That's where the recruiting will have to come in, and they can't sit around for the transfer market because they haven't gotten that good transfer the past 2 years.
They're No, transfers are never going to fix your entire roster.
They would help. I mean, Mariano helped. Brendan Bomberry helped, but they didn't have anybody.
Brendan Bomberry was the
third best player, but he got injured for the entire year, so he's not going to help with Jerry Stotts. Seth Delisle was a backup Fogo. That didn't
do it. All right, let's move on.
Jerry Stotts is out. So, I mean, if you got to get the best players, got to be interested in that. Ryan Powell, I mean, just got hired by Syracuse. He's going to be running their camps. He's just a guy with a title on it. Tim Destler's doing the same thing. You got to have those guys recruit.
Yeah.
We
can save it for the Syracuse postmortem podcast.
All right. We move on to Saturday's game, and guess who's not a team in crisis? The Penn State Nittany Lions, as they drub Robert Morris 27-10, and it was not even that close, which is the absurd thing of it.
Penn State scored 26 goals and put the backups in.
Folks, Penn State is that damn good. So Penn State beats Robert Morris, who, as we said, we went into the season saying they're probably the best low major team, and Penn State beat them by 17, 27-10. So Penn State, woo-wee, they're bringing all comers this season.
They had 12 freaking goals in the second quarter.
They could have got 35. I mean, they had 25 by the third quarter when they really, kind of let off the gas. But this is like peak Albany and Yale. If you combine both of the
skill
sets. Yeah, Chris had a good comparison, yeah.
What it is? Is it's peak Cornell?
Yes, Jake.
With Jeff Emmerich.
Best part of that, not Chris. Sorry.
Oh, I guess
Siebold era Cornell.
With Rob Cornell and Ryan Hurley and Max Siebold, and then they're really good on defense too, and that's what it looked like. I mean, they look like so far Tamburoni's best Cornell teams, and those teams were really, really, really darn good.
Elsewhere in the Big Ten, Michigan holds off Cleveland State 10-8, so Michigan gets the win there. Cleveland State, even though they're 0-2, looking pretty, pretty good in year three to start off being competitive against Big Ten teams. Gonna be fun.
They fought off a 7-0 deficit, and they made it a one-goal game. And they were in it for the entire second half, for the most part. So give credit where credit's due with Cleveland State.
Yeah, they look good. Two straight games again. I mean, both Ohio State and Michigan, maybe not Maryland, but both solid teams. It was good. Yeah, it was good development by Coach Sheridan. Vikings are an attractive team for a conference who may be looking to add a new member.
All right. The other big game heading into the weekend. The big game heading into the weekend was Virginia versus Loyola. And you could kind of say Virginia's in crisis. If we're adding on the hyperbole this episode, you could say Virginia in crisis. But really, Loyola looks really good. They beat Virginia 17-9. Virginia does have some issues, but man, do the Greyhounds look good. Pat Spencer with a casual 5-goal game. Kevin Lindley adds 5 of his own. Loyola making a good argument for putting them towards the top of the poll.
I compare Pat Spencer to the Cake Boss, where, unlike the Cake Boss, where he says, "You can't arrest me, I'm the Cake Boss," Pat Spencer's out on the field and says, "You can't stop me, I'm Pat Spencer." 7 points, 2 cost turnovers, 1 ground ball, looking firm as the Toronto favorite.
Pat Spencer's Pat Spencer. The bigger deal, Kevin Lindley looked very, very good. Virginia could not guard him. That's the big deal for Loyola, because last year in these kinds of games for Loyola, teams would kind of not shut down Pat Spencer. They would devote all their resources to Pat Spencer, and they'd make other guys, have the ball in their stick and beat them, and they couldn't do it. In this case, the Loyola guys did it. Chase Scanlon, he had a goal or two where, they let him alone, and he was able to beat his man. Kevin Lee several times was able to beat his defender one-on-one, take him to the rack and put a goal in. They had a couple goals where, Spencer would get the primary assist, beating the other guy would get a hockey assist, beating his man, put on to Spencer on for a goal. I think they had one of those. Yeah, they looked very, very good. Virginia looked like Virginia. Their shorties are utterly terrible. They don't have a good goalie. On offense, you know, they got plenty of talent. Matt Morris was great. Doc Aitken was really good. Michael Krause looked a bit, he didn't look injured, but he looked a bit knackered. He didn't look his 100% best. But overall, no, I mean, Virginia looked like Virginia. If you, for some reason, thought Virginia was number one, which there are certain people out there who, for the last, like, 3 years have just assumed, hey, I wouldn't be shocked if Virginia got to number one, even though there's no evidence to support this assertion whatsoever. Okay, but otherwise, Virginia looked kind of like the team they are, running up against just a better Loyola team that looks like a better team than they were last year when they made the quarterfinals.
One thing I'll give Virginia credit for, they did keep the turnovers down a little bit. Like, this is actually odd. Loyola nearly doubled up the Virginia in turnovers. They had 22. The Greyhounds, but they were, you know, still able to just run away with it. Big shout out to Jacob Stover and, you know, 19 saves. Chris, I saw you on tweeting of the, like, the higher number of saves, I guess, maybe not directly causation, but definitely seems to be connected to the, you know, shot clock. We're seeing just monster games from a lot of keepers out there. This feels like the fifth or sixth game where some guy got close to 20, or if not over 20, in a game. So, I think we're going to see a lot more of these type of performances throughout the year.
And I was talking to Ryan Demarest, who's the main Cascade guy, and he used to play goalie in college, and we were having the same discussion too, like, you know, with the shot clock, how many saves are we looking at for, you know, an average goalie to make in a game, like, probably around, what, 14, we said like 14 to 16, and I think, Ryan, you mentioned this on Twitter too, on, I think kind of Wednesday when Trotter had that 19 save performance, so I'm looking at like 14 to 16, 17-ish performance, where you'd say that's kind of normal.
And last year the top goalies, like the highest ones in save percentage, had 11, around 11 saves a game. Mm-hmm. Phil Goss had like 14 because Phil Goss plays goal for Brown. But so far, Kobe Kanese, who is the number one in save percentage so far, is Robert Casey at Hofstra, who saved 82% of their win this weekend. He made 14 saves. Kobe Kanese, Penn State's played two games, he's made an average of 15 saves. Mm-hmm. Tim Troutner, an average of 12.5. You know, Fred Dobson to St. Bonaventure, an average of 12. You know, so you're seeing some of the numbers. Matt Sefcik at Wagner has made an average of 13.5 so far. Possibly the numbers might come down as, you know, the season goes on and teams get more used to, you know, dealing with, you know, the new rules and everything. But I think so far it's clear that there are more possessions and teams are, extend the shot clock by throwing a shot, you know, somewhere off on the street and pretend it was an actual shot, you know.
Those are my favorite shots late in the game. I love possession shots.
No more possession shots. No more, you know, late in games with, you know, when you have man up, you can't run it down, you know, and just burn time. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's obvious so far that I would not be shocked if you see maybe, you know, goalies making, on average, two or three more saves per game.
Yeah, it's kind of like when the NHL, I know we masquerade as a hockey podcast half the time, but kind of like when the NHL brings out a new rule and you think it's going to do one thing and it always has an unintended consequence. I think we're seeing that a bit with the shot clock with more goalie saves and everything.
I mean, is that an unintended consequence or is that just, isn't that people?
I guess a side effect. Well, I think everyone was expecting, higher goal score, goal totals.
Yeah, but I'm not like it take too much time to run through what the goal totals are.
Yeah, nobody was really focusing on the goaltending play as much as they were the offense.
Sure, but I mean, look, more possessions, more shots. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the goals, if the goals haven't come already, again, I don't need to take too long to run numbers, but if they haven't come already, I'm sure they'll come too. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's rat out a couple games. Maryland hangs on against Richmond 10-9. The Terps, even though they had to thwart off a game Richmond comeback, they do a lot better than a lot of their fellow team, big name teams, did, and actually get the win and hold on. So the Terps win that, and that's a solid win too. The Spiders are always upset minded, so that's not too shabby for the Terps, even though it was one goal win. North Carolina beats Furman 14-10. Furman did add a bit in garbage time, but even still, UNC gets the job done. That's more than most of their ACC brethren can say. Speaking of ACC brethren, Duke did rebound in their second game of the week against Jacksonville. They win 15-8 in Florida for that one. So the Blue Devils do rebound a bit from after their shocking midweek loss to High Point. And then Ohio State beats BU 17-10. So the Buckeyes win that one against the Terriers.
Got a quick question going back to Richmond, Maryland. Do you think Maryland was leading 10-4 before the start of the fourth quarter? Do you think pre-shot clock era, this wouldn't be a one-goal win for Maryland? Do you think that Maryland would be able to be like holding it back a little bit? And maybe it's like a 10-6 game?
Probably. Because like Maryland hit the post twice in this quarter when they had the ball. Like Maryland was still trying to score. So yeah, pre-shot clock, maybe Maryland, you know, obviously is putting, you know, the foot on the brake and slowing it down and milking the clock. And that it maybe ended up being 10-7, 10-8, something like that. I think the score's a bit deceiving in this one. Richmond played well, getting credit. You know, you just hang in there and come back and push. Maryland hit the post like 5 times. Richmond had like 2 or 3 goals that were just like very weird, kind of like their first goal. A guy had a shot and it got the stick. The defender tied his stick up, but the ball fell right into the stick of a player in front of the net, and he scored. Second goal was similar, loose ball kind of play. So Maryland hits the post 5 times. Richmond gets, you know, a couple of you know, kind of weird goals. I think the score is a bit deceiving there. You know, and again, Maryland was up 10-4 after 3 quarters, even if they had already hit the post like, you know, 3 or so times.
Did Jake, did Shockey only get his attempts in the fourth quarter? Not a gotcha question. I just noticed the discrepancy. Henningen was 15 for 15 at the faceoff, and Shockey wasn't horrible. You know, he was 5 for 8. So, again, I was just trying to explain, because I was looking at the Penn State game. Jared Osari, sorry, I think I'm
Richard's last name,
but Osari barely played in the second half. You know, Maryland was like 13 for 16.
Yeah, Maryland rode Henningsen for most of the game, which I imagine they're going to do. Both of them are great, and so it's, you know, if Henningsen is going to win every faceoff, why put Shockey in there and get wear and tear when you don't have to?
Yeah, that's what I kind of felt like, hey, we're up 10-5, fourth quarter. Not that they were just trying to...
throw the other guy in there.
But you don't really expect... You know, by the third goal that Richmond gets in a row, and then you get a couple pipes, like, then it really kind of feels a little weird. But I think Maryland was pretty much in control. I mean, they just kind of dominated that first half, 8-3. And then... Yeah, they probably were just like looking to get out of that game without any injuries before they rode up to Penn this weekend.
Yeah, no, the offense from Maryland is not quite there 100% yet, though I have seen some positives. Anthony DeMayo's looked really good. Bernhard Wisconsin, some family doing their thing. So, you know, they're a work in progress, I think, on that side of the ball, as probably evidenced by, you know, scoring 11 and 10. But, you know, for them, you know, they still look solid, you know, in both games. Jacksonville Duke was an interesting one. You know, Duke, this was a pretty competitive game up until the fourth quarter. It was 11-8 Duke after 3. Duke won the fourth quarter 4-0. You know, Duke scored. This was another game where Duke, you know, to me, in the 6-on-6, you know, this game was 9-8 at one point, midway through the third quarter, and 4 or 5 of Duke's goals had come in, again, kind of transition, unsettled kind of situation, and they were not really able to exert themselves against Jacksonville in the 6-on-6. Even, you know, and the main thing for Jacksonville was they just could not get the ball enough, and I think that eventually wore down on them. Duke was just continually winning faceoffs and able to play make it take and put it away. You know, again, Duke still, Joe Robertson had a great game. He put in, I think, 4 or 5 goals. Joey Manon had a good game, so, you know, still, you know, Duke, the guys they need to show up definitely showed up. Brad Smith had 2 assists. He looks still, you know, better than he did on against High Point, more healthy. Not a lot of saves in this game. This was just one Turner Upgren so far from Duke. It's not been great. He's looked, you know, that was a question Danny Potter was doing for him for a long time. You know, he hasn't looked great so far. Jackson, but Jackson, I'll give them credit. They hung in there. Just some it's just a few kind of mistakes in terms of, you know, turnovers, kind of key ground balls. Duke out ground ball Jacksonville 40-17. A lot of that, again, is when you win faceoffs, you know, but that was a bit of an issue for the Dolphins. But Duke definitely looks like a work in progress to me so far. Even on offense, even though some of the totals, even though they scored, you know, 41 goals in three games, I think that against some of the tougher teams on their schedule, especially next week against Denver, who was a good defensive team last year, I think there could be some issues.
Well, you know who, you know, like Syracuse, another completely rational fan base that any loss can throw you into crisis. Well, number 7 ranked Johns Hopkins lost 17-8 to unranked Towson.
And Brian,
thus Johns Hopkins is in crisis.
Johns Hopkins above Towson in his poll.
Yes, I will explain my kind of admittedly flawed system that goes into my poll when we explain our polls at the end. But Johns Hopkins in crisis. Towson looked good.
Let's run through the other games. Delaware 11, Mount St. Mary's 8, Georgetown 13, Sacred Heart 10, Navy 13, Vermont 8.
Yeah, that's a good win for Navy there. 14, and Lafayette 14.
And JIT 10.
Yeah, good. That's a good win for Navy before we get into the Barry Hopkins portion of the program. But, you know, Vermont's been a solid team, and that's a very good win to start the year off for the midshipmen.
Good one for Georgetown as well. Danny Beccaro returned from injury. He put up 7 points.
Yep.
It's impressive. Joseph Gacy had a great game for Sacred Heart. He had 5 goals, but Georgetown, give him credit. That's a defensive team. They held Max Tuttle to just 1 goal. So impressive for them as well. And Owen McElroy, who was replacing Nick...
Morocco.
Nick Morocco. He had 16 saves and saved 61%. So competitive game. Sacred Heart's a good team, but solid start for the Hoyas as well.
Going back to Navy, I was a little bit of one of those people that I thought they weren't going to do well with a shot clock. I was freaking wrong. Grayson Terrain had a 6-point day with 5-1. Ryan Wade had another 6-point day, flip it with 1 goal, 5 assists. Christian Daniel, who a lot of people were raving about and kind of liked this game too as a freshman, 2 goals and 2 assists at the attack. I believe Ryan Critt had 13 saves. Good day for Navy overall. I believe they have on Friday, they play, if I'm correct, they play UMBC, which should be a good game. We'll see if Navy's offense, well, I think this will be the first time we'll see UMBC's defense, too, in the shot clock era. So we'll see how they do, and we'll see how Navy's offense is. And also, Lafayette, no, not a game people are watching because NGIT Lafayette, are you really going to watch? But shout out to Pat Myers' first career win as a head coach, and he had a 5-goal. He saw a 5-goal effort from senior midfielder Connor Dennert. Career high game.
Navy's got a nice kind of balance at offense. Grayson Terrain's, you know, classic, you know, dodging midfielder. You don't go to the cage. He had 5 goals. But Ryan Wade's a great passer. We had 24 assists last year, and Christian Daniel, as a freshman, put up 21-10. So I think that's a key thing. I think the shot clock is you got to have, you know, balance on your offense. You know, you got to have kind of multiple options who can move the ball well. Navy has that. And, you know, it's a very good win for them. I mean, Navy was a good team last year. You know, they were in the conversation for tournament spot until, you know, kind of the last week when they lost by 1 goal to Lehigh. You know, if they'd won that game, maybe go for it in the Patriot League tournament, they could have snuck in. But they were a good team last year, and it's a good start for this year.
But we're really here to Barry Hopkins. But yeah, I mean, we've always talked about Towson and their defense, but man, Towson and their offense, led by Brendan Sunday, Bloody Sunday, 6 goals, 2 assists in an 8-point effort, and Towson putting up 17. This ain't your papa's, Nadal and Coach Towson Tigers.
This was like a amalgamation of like all of Hopkins' blowouts over the last few years because they all kind of have the same DNA. Other team has a great day at the faceoff dot. Alex Woodall, all credit to him. 21-28, absolutely masterful performance. I think he had that one win that resulted in a goal 3 seconds later. really unfortunate, unfortunately, long periods of dormant offense pretty much felt like from that 4-2 lead until like midway to the third quarter. It felt like I didn't even see Hopkins have the ball. And it's just like a ball. Again, I'm not like totally concerned, partly because I just think that's a much better team Hopkins has than but that was on the field that day. But I think more or less it's a rivalry game. Towson does really well at home. They've won the last two games at Johnny Unitas Stadium in the series. So now they've won three games in a row at home. So all the credit to Towson. Shout out to you, Jake. You know, that was Hopkins got jumped. Like, it was just literally, they had a pretty good first quarter, and then after that, it was just like all Towson.
Yeah, as much as I love to bury Hopkins, it's one of my favorite pastimes. This was like an avalanche. It just, Hopkins looked good in the first quarter, and then they just never touched the ball again. And then by the time, you know, like, games, like, momentum doesn't really exist necessarily, but they're all, but kind of just, games can just have that kind of avalanche effect, and it was just, Towson would get every ground ball, or Towson would win a face-off, and they'd score, and then they'd win the face-off again, and they'd score, and then there'd be a scramble for it, and Towson would pick it up, and then they'd go down and score there in transition, and then they'd get the ball off a face-off, and then they'd score again, and it's just, it just comes at you in a wave, and before you know it, boom, the game's over. And I think that's kind of what happened to Hopkins here. They just got swarmed. You know, it's just, and that can just kind of happen, you know, especially when you don't touch the ball. If there was some concern for Hopkins, which long-term, I do think they'll be fine. You know, they still, when they did have the ball again, early in the fourth quarter, good. This was a Hopkins team was really physical last year and kind of prided themselves on it, and they got bullied.
Yeah.
Towson bully balled them. I mean, the middle of the field, on some of those ground balls, Towson bully balled them.
It was all Towson. Yeah, and I think, like, I love to hear all your guys' take. It feels like the clock is an extra defender. Obviously, it is. But, like, for a team like Towson, where you got, like, 10, 15 seconds left of the time, you know, and time to get something up, but, like, if they then, like, start attacking you more, like, extend and become more aggressive, like, you have the clock running down, and then, like, it just felt like Hopkins just didn't have any control. Like, any time they would get the ball, especially in that second quarter, it was like our player was on the ground, Towson had the ball, they were advancing to the goal, and they were scoring. And it was just like clockwork. And it was just like, it just wouldn't stop. And that through the, like, middle of the third quarter, it wasn't like, I think Cole Williams finally scored with like 11 minutes, but there was a gap from the first quarter through halftime where Hopkins just never got anything going. And then Towson scored like three more goals in the third. You know, just when like Hopkins was only down like 10-4 at half, like Towson just like put their foot down and then dropped another five.
Yeah, I think
there was concern. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, I think you made a good point of the clock being an extra defender. I think this shot clock really suits Towson's smash mouth brand of defense a bit. They're a tough defense to go up against on any given day. Then you add in the pressure of you have to get something off in 80 seconds. That's a potent combo for the Tigers.
Well, and it's that, you know, you can create a lot when the shot clock runs down and you get a little antsy and, you know, your feet aren't moving as well. Towson is very physical, and they create a lot of turnovers. And when you create turnovers with a shot clock, you're going to get opportunity to run. You're good. And I think we thought, well, Towson doesn't, you know, necessarily like to run, but that doesn't mean they can't. Like, that's the thing I think people sometimes forget with some of these teams, is that it may not be Towson, and same with kind of a Maryland. It reminded me when, like, Maryland played Brown in the tournament a couple years ago. And it was like, oh, well, Maryland can't run. They're like, oh, we can. We just don't usually choose to. But if you want to let us, we'll be fine with it. And I think that's kind of the thing, is that it might not be Towson's default setting to run, but they can. And I think that's what's shown here. They have the ability to, if they want to, you know, kind of kick it up in gear when they, you know, when they're physical with you, when they cause some turnovers, like Zach Goodrich had a goal in transition. Towson's got some athletes who are capable of doing that. And so, I think if we were wrong, Towson definitely has the pieces to work really well with the shot clock.
They They never pulled the horses when they had numbers. If they got the turnover at midfield, or they got the, you know, it was anytime they was had an advantage, they seemed to be back. And then you have two clocks. You have to get the ball over midfield in 20 seconds, and then you have to get a shot with it the last remainder. So, like, there's two times where they can get you caught in a trap and turn it around and pass it to Sunday for a quick score. So, it was horrible. It was a horrible afternoon.
It cheered me up after a terrible Friday night. Let's leave it at that.
Like, Hopkins, I mean, there were some cases where Towson was winning too many one-on-ones, I think, for Hopkins fans to be totally comfortable. Like, there were some occasions where Hopkins didn't look like they could win some one-on-ones, which I think was a bit of a concern for Hopkins coming in, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, was, you know, that as good as they've been, they did lose, you know, Timmy and Shaq Stanwyck, and, you know, how would you replace those guys? Ultimately, like, I think they'll be fine. I think they just got avalanched. With that being said, you play Loyola next week, and then you got three on the road. Mm-hmm. So that's where it gets dicey. Like, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah,
I think they just got caught on a bad day.
Yeah.
But yeah, you got Loyola next week, and then you go to at Carolina, at Princeton, and at Syracuse. Now, I think they're better than all three of those teams. But when you got to go on the road, and if you're 0-2, because Loyola looks really good, mm-hmm. that can get a little dicey.
Yeah. Next week's going to be the big cause for concern with Hopkins, because, as I said, it's a Charles Street derby, and Loyola looks really good.
Jake, you really nailed it. I love Shaq. I didn't give as much credit to, like, how lost the team kind of looked offensively without him. I think you put all that shot clock, road game, regional, in-state rival, so it gets
Northern Baltimore.
It was like a perfect storm. Northern Baltimore. It was definitely a perfect storm of all.
No, I mean, it's like things that could happen. They lost. Their conductor, which was Shaq, and they lost the game breaker, which is Timmy. Like, that's quite a lot. It's one thing to lose the guy who makes everything go. It's another thing to lose the guy who can do anything when it gets kind of, you know, like Timmy would have. I'm not gonna say he would have saved them yesterday. I mean, on Saturday, but that's the exact kind of guy who would have thrived in that kind of game. And so, like, again, I think they'll be fine. And I do think there were some worries. Look, Hopkins the last couple years has always done well with their backs against the wall. They seem to play better with their backs against the wall than they do, you know, when everything's kind of going their way. But ultimately, I think you just got to look at Towson. I mean, Brendan Sunday looks fantastic. Brody McLean came out of nowhere, had a hat trick. I hadn't heard of him before. You know, I'm very excited. I was kind of feeling down on Towson coming to this year. Just kind of felt like it kind of come off a peak that they had for a couple years there, but never count off the captain.
And just to put a quick bow on my point that I was making, once they get past next week, though, I know that's going to be a tough three-game road stretch, but, you know, UNC's looked okay, but I think Hopkins looked better.
Yeah.
They should beat Princeton. They should beat Syracuse. I mean, yes, if Syracuse in desperation might throw a curveball and everything, but if Syracuse looks the way they did against Friday, Hopkins will have no problem. So it'll be a fun extra week of Hopkins in crisis, but in reality, they're not.
Again, they play great with their backs against the wall. I would not be shocked if that Loyola game is very, very competitive.
Also, though, look ahead with Towson's schedule, too. I mean, after Mount St. Mary's, they got Georgetown, then Loyola on a short week. Then they have the crown event, which they play Jacksonville and Cornell, two games in 3 days. They're at Duke. Then they host Denver, and then CAA plays. That's not the easiest schedule either.
No, it's not, but
outside of Mount St. Mary's.
But that's going to be really good for CAA play, and if they get into CAA play, win the CAA again, they're battle-tested for the NCAA tournament right for the upset.
And if you can pick off some of these, look, Loyola, Cornell, Duke, Denver, you're not going to win all of them. You're probably going to lose most of them. If you could pick off one or two of them, you know,
talking at large if you don't win the CAA.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, you've got a chance to rack up some good wins in the event that something does go wrong, but we're getting too far ahead of ourselves, you know. But they look great.
We'll wrap up Saturday's slate. We'll start with St. Bonaventure gets their first goals of the campaign and of their rebooted program. They lose 15-7, though, to St. Joseph's, so the Hawks get a victory there. Rutgers wins a pretty dicey one against St. John's, 19-15. They pulled away at the end off a big 6-0 run, but they were in a dogfight with the Red Storm for most of the game, so Rutgers squeaks out a victory there. In a New York City derby, Manhattan beats Wagner 11-10, so the Jaspers get the victory there and some outer borough bragging rights. Up in New England, blast out the John Cena because UMass Lowell beats noted sleeper team Quinnipiac 12-10. Army beats UMass 12-11 at Gerber in overtime. Thank God Chris gave up that shtick. So Army, that was a game that we all had circled heading into the weekend as well, and it did not disappoint. Very good win for the Black Knight Cadets. We'll just wrap up the rest of the games real quick, and there is going to be one that we're going to save for last because it's a special one. Marquette beats Bellarmine 15-9, so Golden Eagles start their season off in the right direction there. In the barn burner of the weekend.
Great game.
Fantastic. Game of the week.
Seth Tierney back, baby. Hofstra 4, Lehigh 3. The Pride get the upset victory in Bethlehem. And because Hofstra doing Hofstra things, racking up big non-con victories, they do so 4-3. Denver wins in the Colorado Derby 11-4 against Air Force. Providence gets a 12-5 victory over Holy Cross in the former Western New York Derby, now just a battle through the thruway because St. Bonaventure came around. Hobart beats Canisius 21-12 in Saturday night lacrosse inside the bubble. And the special one that we were saving for last, in just game two, the Utah Utes score their first ever victory, 13-9 over the Mercer Bears. So congratulations to Coach Holman and all the Utes on their first program victory, the first of many more to come.
Let me just say this about Utah. Josh Stout. Now, I had Jimmy Perkins to play, and he's the Robert Morris guy, but Josh Stout, man. Week two, he's leading the country in goals. Week one, I should specify, there's a week zero and week one. 10 goals leading the country. It's 7 against Mercer. It's Mercer. But 7-goal performance, it's pretty damn good. Sam Camberry had 5 cost turnovers, so most of that of any defenseman this week. And I was texting with Brian Holman right before the game on Saturday and Friday, and he mentioned, like, we're going to play a lot better, I promise you that. And now we're playing phone tag, so I'll probably tag him back later after we record. But they got Hofstra next. Hopefully Hofstra scores more than 4 goals. But, yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the games, and I know Coach Holman mentioned, like, you know, they hope to win 3, 4, 5 games, kind of. This was definitely one of the games that, you know, I was
6-7
at a team. But this is one of the games I was pointing at a definite possible win for Utah, and they win by 4. And what could come next? We could find out. Maybe there might be a surprise.
There's a few other games on that schedule. They can score. They can score. Stout is a legit player. Jimmy Perkins, when he plays, he's obviously a great player. They got James Sexton. He's got 1 goal and 4 assists. Aaron Gelstead, he's got 4 goals so far. Jake Stout, who I'm assuming is Josh's...
Yes, brother.
...in of some kind.
Brother.
Yeah. They can score some goals. And positive for them was in goal. Liam Donnelly had a good game. He saved 59%, you know. Obviously, it's going to get much tougher from here, you know, with some of the teams they got coming for the next few weeks. But they can score. And, of course, you know, they're going on the road. They'll be their, you know, be their first road games. But they got some dudes who can score. And it's a really good win for them. A really nice step in the right direction.
What does it say about Mercer, though? I mean, you lose. If you're Mercer, you're going in there. You're established. Then you go to Utah, and you lose to a first-year program in their second game.
Mercer, what do you say? I don't know.
I don't know if they care, but
I don't know.
Probably don't.
I mean, you're going up against a school with Pac-12 branding and everything, so they are going to be a little bit better than most first-year teams.
That's true.
I think Utah's not a normal. Utah, like, with all due respect, St. Bonaventure. Like,
yeah, it's a different caliber player.
And you're player. Just, you have the entire coast to, you know, like, Mercer's, yeah, look, like, down there in the.
Crazy good coaching staff, too. I mean,
yeah, this is like a. If you wanted, like, a perfect school, like, experiment in, like, a peachy dress, so you go with Utah. You have no competition regionally besides, like, Denver and Air Force. But, like, a lot of kids who want to go to, like, a Pac-10 school are going to look at Utah. You know, it's getting pretty popular, obviously, in California. Utah, so the game's growing. Like, they have a really good chance. Like, I don't really think, like, 4 or 5 is out of the question in, like, if they really are scoring like this, you know, they could do really well, you know, get some damage done at the end of the season.
But I was looking at the aspect of your Mercer, and you don't want to lose to a team that's in their second game. And that kind of sucks for them.
You don't want to lose to anyone.
No. I hear you. It doesn't look good.
By the end of the year, Utah will probably have another win, maybe 3, and it'll just be one bottom 20 team beat another bottom 20 team. You know, like, I don't know. I'm not going to bag on Mercer. You know, they win 3 to 4. They win 3 to 4, maybe 5 games a year. And I imagine that they will probably find a way to win. Look, they lost, like, 3 of their top 4 scorers from a year ago. Now they lost, you know, they had an experienced team last year and they lost some guys from it. I don't know. You don't want to lose any game. I don't know. Like, look, if we're going to presume that Utah is a program with a lot of potential and a good team, I'm not sure why we're going to, like, bag on Mercer and, like, shame them for being, like,
lost to.
No, I know. Like, I'm not saying you did. I don't think any of it.
Like, I think, like, it's a away game. It's an early season away game. Like, Vermont did fine, obviously. But,
Vermont is a pretty darn good team.
Yeah.
Vermont's a good squad.
Oh, yeah. It's fine. Anyhow, Rutgers, St. John's, like, Rutgers is going to be fine on offense. Like, Beads is perfectly fine. Guys taking 2 years off, not a problem at all. He looks fabulous. Kieran Mullins, fantastic. So, the offensive side, they've essentially returned an entire attack from last year. Beads has plugged in seamlessly. Got a couple other really good guys on there. They are going to score goals. The issue is, I felt the defense would be a bit better than this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought they returned some guys on the defensive end. I thought that would be a positive for them. They got lit up. And look, part of it is that it's Rutgers. The way they play, you know, it's up and down. You know, it is week 2. You know, maybe St. John's, you know, is a bit better than we think. Entirely possible. Give them credit. But, yeah, like, Rutgers, fine offensively, but, man, Challenge made it really easy to score there for large parts of that game.
Yeah, it's going to be – it's a little concerning for Rutgers right now. I know it's still early in the year, but they were in ball games with Lafayette and St. John's.
Not in a ball game with Lafayette.
But here
– I know y'all took like 27 minutes on the podcast last week to talk about Lafayette.
I mean, look, it's a downtrodden team, and they perform pretty decently. We give credit where credit's due.
Well,
I know we took a little
too long.
Credit
to Lafayette, but it's like – Rutgers was completely in control of that game. Like, that was not a thing. But
this game was definitely...
Yes.
In question. Right. And they got a tough one against Army. Remember, Army's the team that was one of the reasons why they missed out on the tournament last year. So, that... And given that Army got a very good win on the road against UMass...
Oh, yeah.
Now,
look, though,
whatever
their stadium's called, and Rutgers is very hard to
beat.
Yeah,
it is in Piscataway, which is a fortress for the Scarlet Knights.
Look, it'll be a good game.
Yeah, it will be a good game. So I think we're gonna really be able to tell where this Rutgers team's gonna go.
They got Army Loyal the next 2 weeks. We'll know. Mm-hmm.
There is something impressive where they really did turn into another gear. Down 15-12.
Oh yeah,
10 minutes left. I mean, like, that was quite a run. To score them, like,
score.
You know, the next 7 goals in 8 minutes.
Score.
Yeah.
And
you want to go over our polls real quick to close?
I'm just going to make one quick point on Lehigh. Now, Lehigh did have... Okay,
we're not talking about this.
Okay, we'll talk about yesterday's game.
I think this caused cool, like, Cross rule like 18. Any game with like less than 8 combined goals where you kind of like don't right.
talk. Well, this one had yesterday had one.
Can you ask Army for a moment because that was the game. Army Brendan Nichols as a freshman had 7 points.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't start. He didn't even start.
That was a fantastic game. Give UMass credit. UMass was down 2 goals late. They managed to push into overtime. Army got the win. Army, you know, offense was a problem for them a year ago. Like, their defense was, the defense is always going to be good. Johnny Sertic's a, you know, preseason All-American player. They got A.J. Barreto.
17 saves,
61%. He's been there forever in the day, and he's always good. You know, so, you know, I think, you know, this is a team, if they can, you know, keep up some offense. Miles Silva, junior, he had 4 goals. He was the guy who, he had 2 goals all last year. He doubled his total week 1. So some guys, you know, we didn't see for him a year ago. Came up and had some big games that weekend. UMass, you know, I feel fine, you know, look good. There is a concern that, you know, was mentioned kind of preseason. They didn't beat a lot of great teams. Kind of down the stretch when they had their run, and this was, you know, Army team looks good and they came a bit short, but really I think the story an impressive win for the Black Knights in week 1. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, decent performance by UMass too, even in the loss. I think the bigger concern is now that Towson's kind of back as a half dog in the CAA. I thought
that they had, you know, kind of a clear, you know, number one in that conference, but Towson certainly probably will change that too.
And then there was one game yesterday. Bucknell beats Bryant 9-6. So the Bison looking pretty decent to start the year. They looked decent against Maryland. They get a win against Bryant. They got a test against Richmond coming up this week. But Bucknell looking pretty decent in the middle part of the Patriot League.
What a way to end the season. What a way to end the weekend.
I admire Bucknell. Like, their 2 leading goal scorers last year had 7-9 goals to 13 assists. And this year, their top 2 goal scorers have 10 goals to no assists.
Well, York had 5 goals in the win, too.
This team, they will just jack it up. Give them credit. Bryant's a kind of team that's kind of slow to get going. They're, you know, they make their hay kind of later in the year.
Mm-hmm. Well, once again, but
what a way to end this the weekend with Bryant 6, Bucknell 9.
Nice. Good to know that that's not in crisis. Yes, let's talk about the polls. First, the media poll is as follows. Yale is number 1. Loyola moves up to 2. Maryland stays put at 3. Penn State goes up the elevator shaft to 4. Cornell stays at 5. Denver to 8. Towson takes a rocket ship and goes up to 7. Rutgers is at 8. Notre Dame 9. Duke drops down to 10. Virginia drops down to 11. Ohio State goes up to 12. High Point moves into the poll at 13.
High Point wasn't even receiving votes. So.
Yeah, they weren't even receiving votes prior, mm-hmm. So now they're up to 13. UNC's at 14. Albany, 15. Georgetown up a few spots to 16. Hopkins drops down to 17. Colgate goes from no votes to 18. Michigan up to 19. Syracuse drops down to 20. Also receiving votes, Princeton, Army, Navy, Hofstra, Marquette, Lehigh, UMass, and Villanova.
We shouldn't do that anymore. We should just do top 20.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know
we
why.
Like, we should just do our top 20.
Not in a rude way, Ryan, but like it should just be like it should be a reward. You should like you only get mentioned if you're top 20.
Like so, we do terrible polls.
I don't know why we're mentioning other people's top 20 when we have our own.
That's true. We have the College Cross top 20 with Yale. It differs quite a bit with Yale at number 1. Then we have a tie for 2nd with Loyola and Penn State. Maryland at 4, Cornell at 5, Denver 6, Towson 7, Duke 8, Notre Dame 9, another tie at 10 between Ohio State and Virginia, Georgetown at 12, Rutgers 13, Michigan 14, Colgate 15, High Point 16, Hopkins 17, Princeton 18, Army 19, Albany 20.
I'm just happy we're at the point where I'm now getting emails from people about how bad our top 20 poll is compared to everybody else's, even though he also mentioned that everyone else's top 20 poll is bad too.
Read the email. Read them on the air. want to know what people say.
Yes, I'm going to put the blame entirely on me because I have a little bit of a different methodology. I've been yelled at on Twitter all week.
That different methodology being ignoring that
yes, head, I know. Head to, I don't put as much emphasis on head-to-head. I know,
wait, but
I know.
Nine goals.
I know. I am awful.
You ranked them eight.
I had them in the back end of the top 20, and I do not make huge jumps from my poll. I know. I have a terrible methodology.
Nine goals. Nine.
Now I gotta see what you voted, Ryan.
I get it. If it's like a one or two goal spread, and it's like I'm totally cool with not making, you know, huge judgments off of one game, I understand. But they beat him by nine goals.
I know. I am bad. I apologize. It's going to even out itself in the next week or two, so if you think mine's wonky now, it will get better. But yes, mine is wonky this week. Yes.
Just nine goals. And like separated by six spots. I mean, you bring Princeton four spots ahead of Towson.
Because
Princeton played a game.
I know, because I put, believe it or not, I actually bumped down Princeton from my initial point. So, for what it's worth on that.
One, I don't know why you ranked them to begin with. But two, nine goals. And the ranked behind Princeton.
Virginia in the top 10. That was a little eye-raising. I thought maybe, like, you know, 12
or 13. Well, they lost to my... I dropped them.
Virginia
would have
dropped
six.
More if everyone else hadn't lost.
Yeah. A, they look better because everyone else lost around them. And B, they lost to a damn good Loyola team. I would, if they played someone else, they would have dropped down the elevator shaft more. But...
They were... Ryan ranking them ninth is dumb, but... I guess about, like, I think Adam had him probably too low at 16, and Ryan had him, Skylar had him 8. That's also too high. I think it balanced out fine. Like, I had him 11.
Adam was
16,
11.
That's a little too. 11, Chris, fine. Safe had him 13. I think that's okay. In the top 10, I don't know. Again, like, I don't know. Ohio State's won two games and looked pretty good, and, you know, are. I still can't get over this Towson Hopkins thing. I just nine goals.
Ryan, I'm actually also shocked you didn't rank Colgate.
Because I don't think Colgate's that good of a team. I think that was an awful Syracuse loss.
Okay, but Colgate legitimately looked good.
They did.
I think they had some talent.
They always bring some talent.
They
guys.
Were. I did have them outside the top 20 for what it's worth, but I think it's
crap,
more
man.
Of a
Ryan. There ain't
Syracuse
there ain't balls. 20 there ain't 20 good teams in the country. So like, I don't know why we even do this. Like, we do this whole thing where it's like also receiving votes. Like, what? It's a nice pat on the head? Like, I only think there's 10 good teams,
no,
but you're ranked 21st.
No, because so I'm just like, showing off my thought process of who also I was considering it and just made the miss.
You got to make the tough choice. That's what we're doing. This is the business we've chosen, Ryan. No
sure.
More.
Towson was ranked 8th, 9th, 7th, 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 6th, and then 18th.
Well, thankfully, with the law of averages, my vote of 18 did not affect the poll. So
literally everyone, everyone had them in the top 10, and Ryan had them 18th. Let's say Ryan had ranked them, I don't know, like a logical person in Hopkins' spot. In 12th, their average would have been like 8. So, yeah, I guess it would have been the same. Would they have moved up on Denver? I don't think. No, they wouldn't have. So, yeah, thankfully it didn't affect the poll. But
Denver had number 6 on lock.
Yeah, like it wouldn't have changed because Denver was. But I mean, seriously. Princeton is 14th. This team hasn't made the NCAA tournament in 37 goddamn million years. Princeton won 8 games last year.
I've kept my preseason, that's part of my methodology, is not moving teams that much who haven't played yet. I've kept...
That was me too.
Okay, why less, Princeton that high to begin with?
Albany's in the same place as well. They haven't played yet. Yale's in the same place. Cornell's in the same place. Notre Dame moved up a little bit by virtue of everyone around.
Let's be genuinely logical here. Like, let's really examine this. You really think Princeton is as good as Towson looked on Saturday?
Again, I also, part of my methodology is...
No, just answer the question.
No. Georgetown is where they are at initially as well. Or they're about that.
I had them 8th, but I gave them a bit more credit because other teams lost. But I think that's fine. I don't know how the heck. I mean, personally, I'm ashamed at the fact that the other poll doesn't have Princeton ranked and we do. I mean, it genuinely eats at my core.
The coaches got them, and US selects. So we're 3 out of 4.
I mean, it eats me alive.
Actually, one point on the other one, on the other poll. I'm surprised Army and Navy didn't get into the polls. I think most of us had Army and Navy in our polls.
Mm-hmm. I did not have either academy.
No. Ryan, Chris had Princeton.
I had Princeton at 20. I didn't want to, because I had them up in my top 22. I didn't want to penalize them for not playing a game.
Why are you rewarding them to begin with?
It was going to be either Princeton or Syracuse in that 20 spot. And I didn't think Syracuse looked like a top 20 team, so that's why I picked Princeton.
Why do you guys just not, like, reward teams for doing well and reward Princeton, like, for being what? Because they were good when you were, like, 10?
Next year, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to vote.
Princeton is going to miss the tournament this year.
Next year, what I'm going to do I'm just going to vote for teams that play that week. So that means if Yale is like the top team in the preseason and they don't play for 2 weeks, they will not be in the poll for 2 weeks.
You know, one thing I know we're rambling here, so I'll throw this out. Shout out to the person who had the courage to put Penn State number one. I don't know if I'm ready to agree with that.
Yeah,
I was contemplating that.
That was all right. Yeah, okay, let's go. When I saw that, I was like, yep. That makes sense.
Yeah, who do we think is that guy that did it?
We're not going to play that. We're not naming names. We're not writing out people. But no, yeah, I was contemplating Penn State over Yale. I know this is going to... because I wasn't going to penalize Yale for not playing yet when...
No, Yale has earned...
Yeah.
One, give him credit, but... Damn, yeah, Penn State looks really good. Not as good as Princeton, but...
I have them 14 spots better than Princeton. Thank you very
they
much.
They look. Pretty, I mean, look, Princeton hasn't played a game, and they're the 14th best team in the country.
And I slid them down.
Why were they that high to begin with? I can't do it.
Might be a good Princeton way to end our program.
Yeah, that's different. Yeah, it's shout out to you, lone Penn State voter. I give you. That was respect.
Me and Ryan, now I'm ashamed that I have the same similar position as Ryan. Just makes me disgusted. But yeah, me and Ryan both had Penn State at 2. Yeah, like Penn State and Loyola, literally as tied could get. I could not break the tiebreaker. They both had the same average. They both had 2 second place votes. 3 teams had 2 second place votes. We had 6. We have 6 voters. Maryland got 2. Penn State got 2. And Loyola got 2. Only difference is Maryland was 4th on every other ballot that did not rank them 2nd, while Penn State and Loyola, for example, Penn State and Loyola were 3rd on all but 1. But Chris ranked Penn State 4th, and Safe ranked Loyola 4th. All the other ones had them 2nd or 3rd.
I promise Cornell, my poll will Cornell be better next won't. Week.
No, it won't.
I actually like the even numbers. I like when, you know, makes it more interesting, the combinations we can all have.
Cornell is the only team that had, or Yale too, obviously. So I had Yale. Cornell is the only team that we all agreed upon. We all ranked them fifth.
And almost they, Denver, yeah. All but Skyler.
Almost Denver. Skyler swapped had Denver sixth as opposed to seventh.
But yeah.
Yeah, you know, four people ranked Princeton.
But hey, only one of us ranked Syracuse.
Yeah, I couldn't do that. I didn't rank Syracuse or Hopkins, honestly. I didn't see why I should. Syracuse didn't look good, and neither did Hopkins, and other teams won some games and looked good.
Next.
Like Colgate, you know, and I thought they looked impressive. Navy looked good. I had UMass high. I had them 11th, and I didn't feel like it was fair to drop them out of the top 20 because they lost an overtime game. So I had them still in. I was the only one to rank UMass, actually. Skyler was the only one to rank Bucknell, which is not a
yeah, not a bad yeah. That's
I'm fair. Bucknell looks solid so far.
Yeah, they've looked pretty decent.
North Carolina, which also pains me, has gotten back inside the top 20. That was certainly frustrating. Adam has them 14. He's the high voter on the field. Navy made it into all but two. Kristen ranked Navy, and neither did Skyler. And Ryan ranked Princeton 14th.
I just realized I think I'm way high on the Hopkins, too, with 12, right?
Yes. They lost by 9 goals, and you dropped them 6 spots.
On that note...
That was a perfect ending.
All right. Well, again, my poll is bad. I recognize it.
So when Towson beats whoever they play this week by 8 goals and Princeton wins by 6, can Towson get up to, like, within, what, like, 1...
Let me see, because Princeton only plays Monmouth. Towson plays...
We'll see, Jake. We'll see on
Towson plays Mount... We'll see. Towson, I think, might be benefiting a bit from some rec... Yeah, Towson's probably going to benefit from some correction next week. Hint, hint.
Just correct it now!
Too late. It's already recorded.
It was on the record. I would correct it if I didn't already do it. I was premature in getting it out because I wanted to get it over and done with. I should have put more thought onto it.
Need a motion. 4 committee members have to approve it. It's a whole thing. Ryan's... The die is cast. We can't do anything about week 1. Yes.
There's only week 2 onward to improve. Yeah, week 2 onward to improve.
Not one step back.
But that's why we put all our ballots to the public. It's accountability, and everyone's holding me accountable. So good on our.
I think I should hold you to the guillotine.
Transparency at College Cross. Anyway, you can follow us on Twitter at @college_cross.
I am at @Erie_Barrister.
I'm at @CF_Dostremski.
I'm at @Jake_Nazar. I'm not going to tweet about lacrosse, and definitely not until Princeton is out of Ryan's top 20 and Towson isn't ranked 18th.
And I'm at RyanMcD29. You could subscribe to us on iTunes, on Google Play, and you could also follow us on Spotify. So plenty of options to subscribe to us. We thank you for listening. We'll be back for College Crosscast episode 100, even though we've had more than 100 episodes, but in the numerical order, 100, for our week 2 preview. So later on this week, we'll see you then.
And Flyers or Sellers?
He ranked Princeton 14th.
Stay hydrated. And I promise that hydration will come in handy when I do a better poll next week.
No, you won't.